Very good. It is, apologies for the delay, it is 7:04. I don't know who I'm apologizing for, sorry. It is 7:04 on April 5th, 2023. Hereby call this meeting of mayor and council of the township of Clifton to order. Madam Clerk, have we met all the requirements of the Open Public Meetings Act? Thank you very much, that was a lot easier than last time when I, it's not written in the way to read it anymore, so I had to go for an assistant. All right, if you would all please join me for a salute to the flag.
My allegiance to the flag of the United States of America, and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
All right, roll call please. Here.
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 Here. Here. Very good. We'll begin with comments from the public for items listed, or given that there's not much public, not listed on the agenda, anything that anybody in the public wishes to speak about. Come on down. Up if you would, and get over there, and what we're going to do is we're just going to ask for your name and the township in which you live. We don't want address.
Thank you. I was used to the old-fashioned microphones, not this, so I didn't see it. Do I have to press the button or work? Hi, I'm Christopher Sedulis, and I live in Clifton Township. I'm here today because I was told that, informed that there would be a representative from JCP&L here.
How are you?
Good. I'm glad.
Glad you made it, too.
Sorry I'm late. So, my issue is, well, first I'll say I'm glad that JCP&L started to give text message updates when there's going to be a power outage that they know ahead of time, which for years I've been complaining about that, you know, and it's good that they do that. People work from home, people have machines that run on oxygen, some people don't have generators, so it kind of prepares people to, you know, plan ahead. But the issue was on the day that we had a rainstorm. It wasn't a hurricane, it wasn't a tornado, but it was pretty windy, it was pretty bad. I know technicians were running all over the place. I'm aware of that. And I was told by many of them that you're understaffed and you have a lot of places to hit. My issue is we lost power and it lasted the full, 1:30 in the morning, I think, over the weekend. And it lasted all the way to 24 hours before I reached out to the mayor, Brian Millay, and I said, you know, can you please contact somebody because this is crazy. Because I kept getting text messages, ETA, of power restored this time. 2-3 hours later, ETA, another 2-3 hours. And in my head, I'm saying, okay, there's nobody working there. There was nobody physically there. They physically came in the morning. In the morning, I think about 9 that morning, so 1:30 in the morning, power went out, 9 o'clock, they arrived, and they assessed the situation, they cut the tree, they removed the tree very quickly, immediately actually, but nobody ever came the rest of the whole day. So it wasn't like they were working on it, but the messages were giving the impression that it's being addressed, we're working on it, we're trying to restore, and to me it felt like lip service. So when I reached out to the mayor, he contacted JCP&L, and they ended up coming back, some workers came back, and they put the pole that had fallen with the cable lines, they stood it up, they rigged it, just as a band-aid, until they could come back and actually do the pole. So I fully understand that. I'm, you know, a very understanding patient person, you know, 30 hours no power, but they could have done that earlier. Could have, you know, think out of the box, say, let's just try to get them power, maybe we can stand the pole up and rig it and come back and actually finish the job instead of letting so many hours go by. Because I'm fortunate that I have a generator, even though it cost me $250. I use about 100 gallons of propane. I was monitoring it. I always do that when I lose power because of nature or something like that. Or if you're working on power and restoring or whatever, maintenance. So it was very frustrating, but thankfully Mr. Millay got on top of it. They were acting upon it quickly. And then I think 6 hours later, power was restored. The other issue is the parts of the telephone pole that was there was left on the property on the corner on somebody's property there on Briar Lane and Petticoat. And for days or weeks now, I'm saying to my wife, are they planning to move that? I mean, are they going to come back? So that was very frustrating, and I don't know why they didn't clean it up when they did the job. And if they had a rush and leave, again, they all had to do is throw it in the truck. So I'm here to express my grievance on that. I think JCP&L can do better. I do appreciate the text message updates, but it also felt like it was just kind of keep us feeling, residents feeling like you're doing something, you're addressing it. So, and the last thing I'll say is there are people that don't have generators. Their food obviously was spoiled. You know, and it causes a lot of problems for individual people. So I don't know what you can give, what feedback you can give tonight to shed light on what was the problem, and if you could just kind of give an overview, and maybe it'll give some clarity. Thank you.
Thank you very much. There being no other public, we're going to get to you in a second.
Okay.
Yep, we're going to hit the consent agenda real quick, just so I don't skip it and go out of line. We'll close the public comment session. We'll do the agenda. All items listed with an asterisk are considered to be routine by the Township Mayor and Council and will be enacted by a single motion. There will not be separate discussion of these items unless requested by the Mayor, Council Member, or Citizen, in which event the item will be removed from the general order of business and considered in its normal sequence on the agenda. Anyone have any questions, concerns, anyone want to pull? Anyone in the audience want to pull? Discuss. Seeing no movement, may I have a motion?
Second.
Roll call, please.
Yes.
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 Yes. Thank you. Okay. Ms. Overman, you're up. And I'll just, before we begin, I want to thank you for your responsiveness. I know it's not always necessarily that what we're looking to get as far as resolution for the residents. But I do want to say you're always pretty good at getting back to me in short order, even on weekends and off hours. I do appreciate that. I also just want to relay from another resident who was not in attendance this evening, who had we've been communicating about certain issues in that area.
Okay.
Had two different things. The first kind of lines up with some of what Mr. Stadula said, which is they understand the need for planned outages, but they would get communication text message that there would be an outage at approximately such and such day and such a time. And I would imagine due to weather and all, it gets postponed. But then that outage would occur without notification.
Okay.
And that, or at least they felt there was no notification.
Okay.
They missed it. So that and I can certainly understand that being an issue if that's how that's transpiring. So if I certainly understand if you have to postpone it, but communicating the new date,
yes,
timely is also,
yes,
also important. And then they also asked if you could inspect the trees and wires along Hamden Road from the town of Clinton. So I guess that's down there, Lee Street.
Mm-hmm.
From the intersection, yeah, on Regional Road where Lee Street ends and,
yeah,
Hamburg begins.
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah, to Wellington Road. So that stretch there, which is probably just past Bennington or so.
Yeah, it's a problem.
Yeah.
It's actually, Wellington is where it intersects with Lyman. Yeah, it's right where it goes down,
yeah,
the road becomes,
yeah,
as well.
But anyway, along that stretch, mm-hmm, it's unfortunate that road's got like six different names. I guess in that area during the few storms, that's where they had some failures due to trees.
Okay.
And I do know from personal experience, again, just because I had the JCP&L's contracted tree folks at my house for my transmission lines just a week or so.
Okay.
I know you're out and about.
Yeah, on the transmission side, or anything like that, I'll speak a little about the distribution.
So, Ms. Overman, if you would introduce yourself and who you're with, and
yes,
we'll get you going. Thank you.
I'm Amy Overman. I'm the External Affairs Rep for Clinton Township for JCP&L. And I'll start my little slide from here.
And would it,
just a couple for reference.
Would it be possible to get this for distribution? Do you have, you don't have any paper copies?
You know what? This is, yeah, probably no. Just up here, engineering, they
don't like to have it.
Pass
okay.
It out, yeah.
Fair enough.
And this isn't even to some of this just like put together with them very quickly. I'll explain what it is too. I just wanted to give some visuals. It's a couple of short slides, just so you know the areas I'm talking about when I'm talking about that. But I will certainly bring back about the planned outages, what's supposed to happen with a planned outage, as much as we know about it in advance, and that it's not an emergency forced outage.
Mm-hmm.
We give what's called a reverse IDR call in advance. If it gets rescheduled, you are supposed to get, you know, the new reschedule that's been postponed, and I will bring back the feedback that that didn't happen recently in Clinton Township. What I try to do too, when there's larger planned outages, I'll typically be contacted about them, and that's why I try to get in touch with you there. I know last year we had a very big one that affected the whole Clinton sub, and I know I was in touch with you and
yep.
Mayor and Clinton, just so we were all on the, and that one even got postponed.
Yeah, no, it was a couple times if I remember, yeah.
And but when they're that large, it's going to affect the whole town. Usually I'm aware, and I get in touch with the mayor as soon as possible, and the police chiefs or whoever is appropriate. Sometimes what we do, just so everyone's aware too, is we'll do a forced outage where we get on site, something's wrong, maybe there's a smaller outage and you've got to take a bigger outage to fix a piece of equipment. If we're able to quickly, we try to get a reverse IDR out. Sometimes it comes out, but again, if they're large enough, I'll get a phone call. I know to get a police chief or mayor. I don't think that's happened here too much with the force.
No.
But just so you know, if there's ever that kind
and
of
I-
situation.
If I'm able to, I'll broadcast that myself, but that doesn't mean that everybody's going to see it.
Okay.
So that's the rub here.
So just to touch on that a little bit, and then I'll get more information, too, on the outage you brought up that was over 24 hours. I'm guessing it was a couple weekends ago, or just
February. Yeah, it feels like it was a little over a month ago.
Yeah, no, that's fine. And after the meeting, if I pulled the record, I can get your address.
It's related to the issue that I mentioned to you over the weekend when Mr. Stabu was referenced with regard to the left behind debris.
Yes.
So it's in that vicinity.
And with that debris, I did speak to our line supervisor first thing Monday morning. He was sending someone out to take a look at it, try to collect it if possible. I have a meeting with them tomorrow morning, and I was actually going to follow up on if it's actually removed or not, and if not, when will it be? So I will get back to you on that, doing it's still there. Oh, good. The pole was to try to remove it on Monday.
Okay.
Oh, good. Yes. Excellent. Then the line supervisor, they got it.
Do you think I still there with things like line wiring?
Okay. Okay. No, thank you. That's good to know. I was going to follow up tomorrow morning. It wasn't removed by then. Okay. So that's some of that stuff, and I will follow up on that. I just came tonight to give some few updates on our end, because me and the mayor have been talking back and forth or corresponding. And first and foremost, I just wanted to thank the mayor for having me, thank you all for having me tonight, and I just wanted to put on the record and acknowledge that JCP&L does hear the complaints you relayed to me from Clinton Township residents. They are being worked on. In particular, we have a reliability engineering department, and just to kind of give definition around that, we have a group of engineers or a team of them that are solely dedicated to reliability. So they'll trace our circuits, they'll look at them, they look at outages and kind of think, okay, what's you know, if there are problems, they tend to catch them. So as it pertains to Clinton Township, Clinton Township, I'm just trying to put this in the best frame of reference possible so everyone can understand it. With your electrical system, you're served by four substations. So Glenn Gardner's up, you know, in that corner up there, you have the Clinton substation, the Lebanon substation, and the Stanton substation. And when I had relayed some of the complaints last fall to reliability engineering, and they were kind of aware something was going on already, there was a particular circuit on the Clinton substation.
I was going to say, it's definitely Clinton.
Yeah, that they wanted to start investigating. And so they did what I came to say tonight, too, is that circuit was investigated between November and December, and we did find work that we're going to be doing on that circuit. And just to give you an idea of what that circuit looks like, it's the one, it goes into Clinton Town, as you can see there, but the whole top and those bottom portions are Clinton Township, and then it touches Franklin Township as well. But basically, what I'm talking about tonight is specific to the Clinton Township portion, where we found some issues feeding and whatnot.
West side of 31.
Yes. 31's there. I'm sorry, the map doesn't bring it all up, but I was trying to do the circuit without showing all the circuit information.
Yep, understood.
So that I was able to get the overlay of the town, so that helped, and where it kind of goes through. But so they completed the patrol and the investigation, and then what happens next in our company, just so you know why this takes time and why these reports take a while to complete. All the work that they find, it goes into what's called our planning and design engineering department. So that's what they're in the process of right now. They're designing a lot of this work to do as quickly as possible. You know, we've had storms. We've had some regulatory work, too. We're doing this work as well with that work. And we do anticipate that it'll be completed, you know, sometime during the summer, and then I'll have a more full report, like I said, Mayor. But basically, the areas, they did give me the areas that they identified where we're making some equipment replacements, and it's mainly wiring and some other electrical components. And again, I'll fine-tune it more when I come back. But the areas we're looking at were Route 31 at Gray Rock Road. Oh, wait, and I want to say this too before I get into this. A lot of where we're making improvements are right on the Clinton Town border and technically in Clinton Town, but the electrical current is fed upstream in Clinton Township. I just want to make sure everybody gets that. So when I say streets in Clinton Town, you understand that it's feeding upstream, and that's where we found the problem. So when we repair all this, it's going to improve reliability for Clinton Township. And so Center Street, east of George Street, engineering told me they're going to be doing some work on Center Street between New Street and Central Ave. West Main Street at East Main Street, there's a couple of projects there. We're going to look with wiring and whatnot. And then Lee Street at Alton Place, they said, is another area. Another thing on Lee Street, there's a piece of reliability equipment called a recloser. They help with, basically, they're similar to Trip Savers, mm-hmm. where they'll isolate and restore customers if it's found that there's not, say, like if a wind brushes it or an animal touches it that doesn't really get in it. They help with reliability to save a trip from the linemen coming. We have a recloser in that area that they're investigating, and right now it's not working the way it should be working. There's going to be some repairs there. And again, this is all going to improve this circuit. And it is, when you sent me some of the complaints, some of them have definitely been on this circuit.
When we looked at the data, it did seem to be like a lot of animal, a lot of little stuff, not major stuff.
And this is that whole like Dorchester area and that area, so this is coming into play there. And then the other thing we did is we did patrol this circuit for forestry. Reliability does that too. And they found on Gray Rock Road near Melody Lane that there was work that needed to be done there. So we did what's called a hot spot trim. This Clinton substation is not on maintenance right now with the trees, and I'll explain all that in a minute too. But back on January 19th, throughout the month of January, we did a hot spot trim in that area. That work was completed. So hopefully the tree outages on this circuit should be coming down a bit, because they thought that was the area of concern. And you'll at least, you know, those tree outages will be done. And then basically what I wanted to touch by showing the substations and whatnot, and I don't, you know, just so you're more familiar too, what our company does is all our substations, they're on a four-year forestry maintenance cycle. And what we do on that is we have a right-of-way, and within 10 feet of our primary conductors, we go along the circuit routes, and we clear all the limbs and the overhang trees and you know, whatever kind of debris in the way. And then with property owner's permission, we will pick trees that we deem to be a hazard. In many cases, it's ash borer trees right now, and they're getting away from this Northwest Jersey. We're keeping up as much as we can, but we've been on cycle. They are what are taking up our time, and people let us take them. We take them, we try to keep it within our right-of-way, you know, as much as possible, and that has has to come first, even with our regulations. I do stress too that, that trees technically belong to the property owner. So if a tree's hazardous, but not perhaps to our lines, or we can't take it because it's in our secondary, there are certified line tree trimmers that a resident can hire as well. And I have resources too from the Arbor Line. I have to look at the organization, but they have how you can get them done.
And I would imagine with the issue that we see with ash trees and light, that there's probably more of that now than there used to be as far as trees. Close enough to maybe take it out, but not in your purview to cut.
Absolutely. And that's what's going on.
It's less than trimming, it's more like...
Yes, yes, and they fall. And even the ones that are in our purview, it's like we're going crazy on cycle, taking as many of them as we can and trying to get them out. So that's...
So you use the 10 feet?
Yes.
And you basically do what you need to do, and then if there's a tree maybe 12 feet in, that could be a problem. Then the residents call this number that you're going to give us? Is that, am I following?
Oh, yeah, no. Yeah, what you can do, anytime a resident, and I should clarify this, if they have a tree that they think may be a hazard, they don't have to judge it themselves. They can call our customer service number or online, like if you Google JCP&L Forestry, there's a form, and some of the townships do put it up on the website. If they contact us and contact Forestry within 10 days, a forester will come out. And our foresters always say they would like to look at it if you're not sure, because we'll evaluate if we can take it or not.
But the homeowner pays for that to be taken down by somebody from you, or?
Yeah, you could also go to private lawn certified trimmers. That's what we recommend usually if we're not going to take it. And if we take it as a hazard in our corridor, that's not a charge either. And that's why they evaluate it. Is it in our corridor? How hazard is it? What is it going to fall on? Something we evaluate too is on people. We have different zones, so we have zone 1, 2, and 3. One's the target that we're going after first with the maintenance, because those are the areas on the circuit where the wires will take out the most customers. Everything we need in order is the smallest. So those primary wires, and then we're going to take out 700 customers. We're going to do those in those trees first. And we try to work as much as we can into zone 2 and 3. But always, you can always call. I can give, I got the customer, sir. I know it's 800-662. I'll give it at the end, too. I need to pick up the other level of stuff. But just to kind of give an idea where Clinton Township is at, the Clinton substation, it was last maintained in 2021, so it'll be up again in 2025, because it's on 4 cycles.
For tree.
For limit overhangs and whatever trees we can take to. But again, someone living on the Clinton substation has a question, thinks something's a hazard, by all means call us, because we just did this hotspot trim concern for that section. So we will take a look at things in between if we think. And also reliability engineering, they will monitor outages in between too, and that's where you'll get those hotspot trims like we just did. Glenn Gardner substation just got done. 2022. So as soon as you do these areas too, with the tree trimming and removals, you start to see a reduction in those tree outages. So that was just done. That'll get done again in 2026. Lebanon substation's the same. We just did the maintenance in 2022. We're going to do it again in 2026. And then the Stanton substation, that was actually last done in 2021. So it's coming up next year. So that's kind of where we're at there. Just to be pointing back to an idea. Township-wide scale, what we're doing, and then they see a homeowner out or something like that. They're very friendly, the foresters and the contract. They will use it, like you might want it. But I will check it too, just on the call. I don't know if there's any information on that, that's what I should say. But I do know if they see something, they will use it. But again, formal request for them to respond within 10 days. So, but I will make that application. And then,
I'm always wondering about the health and drinking, trying to walk from the district, if you're not getting something turned up, so they all, you know, they have to take care of it, like, whatever they do. Well, they don't have this outside of JCP, and they have a separation of rights. That might does happen, they've got a workload, because, you know, they're trying to think of, mitigating things happening in the long term.
Yes. And as much as we can on these cycles, we're trying to take as many actions we can to try to mitigate a lot of this. And something we always emphasize too, we remove a lot when there's storms, though, in northwest New Jersey, like particularly that Christmas storm and whatnot. It's almost unavoidable, even in a secondary area, that something may not fall. We can't guarantee that we'll get 100% no outages out of this, but we'll greatly reduce it, hopefully. But you'll get these storms with these winds, and there will be outages. And sometimes, I know I've seen in Clinton Township, it might have even been yours a month or so ago, like there was a very complicated one where the wind blew through, I believe a tree took a transformer, a number of spans of wire. Those are very complicated. I was going to go through some of the restoration process too, and why it looks like we're on and off and on and off and a little bit, just to go through that, and what's actually going on along with the EPR. I'll get to that in a minute too. But that's, yeah, some of those in very bad weather can, that they're, you know, they will happen in northwest New Jersey. That's what I should say, because we have the trees. And I live here, yeah, I live in northwest New Jersey as well, so I understand this too from a personal perspective. The one thing I also just always want to touch on is the company we're required, and we do have preventive maintenance programs that people don't see because they're very behind the scenes, but I'd like to include that as well. We do inspect our circuits every 5 years. We identify equipment deficiencies, and then we repair them. So that goes on each of those circuits at those substations that are on a 5 year cycle. Our wood poles, we inspect them every 10 years. Company Osmos does that work for us. We've been doing a lot of pole replacements the last couple of months. I know like Hunter and County, so that's where you'll see that work come up. And we do them on 10-year cycles for strength, but obviously, you know, we see a pole that we're going to replace it too. And then also with our circuits, we do a thermography scan so that on a 4-year cycle, we're monitoring them for things that are not visible to the eye. And then we're remedying one there too. A lot of times what can happen with wires is lightning can strike them, that sort of thing, and really put these minuscule holes that we'll never see with the, you know, just by eyesight, so we do the thermography to try to catch these. And so that's kind of just some of our preventative maintenance. Another thing I just wanted to talk about while I'm here, because I've been trying to talk about this when I go to townships, as far as improving our grid for resiliency, because that comes up a lot. JCP&L, we are beginning smart meter installations, and it's AMI technology. I just kind of wanted to go through that for a minute, too, if that's all right. That is going to be a big improvement to Clinton Township and other areas as well. But what we're doing, we actually started in March of 2023 in JCP&L installing the smart meters. Clinton Township and Hunterdon County in general, we're going to be receiving the smart meters during November, in the window of November 2024 to June 2025. Our project was approved by the Board of Public Utilities too, so we did have to go through the process with them. And this is going to modernize our electric distribution system tremendously, and I'm very excited for it, as are a lot of my colleagues. We're going to be putting in 1.1 million smart meters over a 3-year period in New Jersey. And we started recently, I see this deployment going on in other areas. So what these meters do is they give automated meter readings, and they're going to enhance our ability to respond to outages, because what we do right now is customers call in. We estimate along the line what's out, but that's why we put those notifications as an estimate, and usually it's pretty on. But what these meters will do is people will call back when they're still out. You'll get that call, like, oh, your outage restored, yes or no. We're going to be able to tell with the smart meters if you're still out or not. So this is just going to greatly help the line crews and kind of figure out who's out where, when. What I always like to say too, smart meter technology, It has been rigorously tested, what we're doing, and it's been proven by manufacturers to be accurate, safe, and secure. We're using technology that's being used throughout the United States. First Energy has used it in other parts of their territory, too. So I'm excited because JCP&L's getting it, but we're getting it at a point where other operating companies got it first, so they kind of rolled it out with some of the, you know, this should be a good process here in New Jersey. And then just so residents know and the township knows, when the smart meters are going to be coming for installation, customers, they're going to get a brochure, basically, 4 to 6 weeks in the mail prior to the installation, and then 2 to 4 weeks before we actually come and do it, you'll get a letter saying that we're going to be doing it. Then the day of installation, if you're not home, we will hang a hanger saying that we did it. Basically, outside, we just swap it out. It's a contracting company doing it with us, too. And there will be a business card with that door hanger, just in case there's any questions or concerns.
Do those operate on a cellular basis? How do they communicate?
What they do is we're installing, like, we're actually doing it now. There's little router and range extenders that are going on the poles, and not that many of them are needed. I was very impressed with this. And they're just going to kind of ping the information from the smart meters outside. And then these routers take up like a lot of mileage. I forgot exactly what it was. So you don't need a lot of them. And they're doing it already in Pennsylvania. So that's, you know, we're seeing it there and how it's functioning. So, and now it's coming to New Jersey. I always like, yeah, go ahead.
There's no interruption in service?
No, there should not be an interruption in service. It's kind of like a swap out when you come. So you should not have and we're going to have the routers up already. They're all going up now, so by the time the actual meter comes, the routers are ready, and they're all online and everything ahead of time. So you'll see that, which is good.
Can a resident opt out of the smart meter?
Yes, I was going to go there next. And I was going to say, if a resident does want to opt out, they can. It's going to be in that information they get in the mail about how to opt out. We are going to charge $15 monthly if you opt out, from the sense of that we're going to be retaining meter readers for people that opt out. The smart meters are going to eliminate the need to have the manual meter readers and going on the routes, because again, with the smart technology, it's just going to ping the consumption apparently and bill that way. But if a customer wants to opt out, it'll be $15 monthly. And then what occurs in some places is if they decide to opt out after we pull it and replace it, like to put back an old-fashioned meter, there'll be a replacement charge of $44.66, and then plus that $15 recurring charge. And again, we're going to outline that along the letter. So
what are the issues around people wanting to opt out?
I know. It's...
I know some of the answers. I just want to hear it from you.
I was going to say, now in some cases, I will say this too, legitimately, some people opt out for a while longer because they might have an indoor meter or something to that extent. I mean, I'll just say it. There's people I heard in Ohio and Pennsylvania with the radio frequencies. Our smart meters, though, they actually, nationwide, you give off less frequency than cell phones do. So just as an example, it's very, very little.
Well, that's one of them. Another one is, you know, apparently you can monitor the types of the appliances that are being used, whether they're energy efficient or not. And if they're not energy efficient, down the road, one could get taxed for not having that efficiency.
No, I was told in the case of JCP&L, our smart meters do not have that ability. At this time. Yeah. No, but they don't do it. The equipment we're putting in cannot do it. That's what I was thinking.
You know, a lot of people are concerned with privacy these days with data.
Yeah.
And so, you know, you could also shut our electricity off remotely.
No, I don't believe with these smart meters we can do that. So okay. I was asking that in light of the California incident that's what I meant to bring up too. Not so much the RFs with the radio frequency, but the California issue. Also, those customers subscribe to some kind of program, I think through the state of California, something like that was shutting them off based on energy. We can't do that. We won't do that. That's not part of this.
Yeah.
This is literally us catching up with a more resilient grid, so we can catch outages better and repair them faster. And
you get the future concern, you know, residents are concerned that the
the people in charge of New Jersey will see this as an opportunity, like in California, and like, oh, you're not buying the right refrigerator, we're going to shut your electricity off, or we're going to fine you in excess of the amount.
Yeah.
You know, so I think that needs to be worded in your documentation.
Okay.
Because people are getting educated about this.
Sure. I will. There are brochures online and whatnot. If you
right.
know JCPNL. I know the brochures affect the radio frequency and those concerns. And but yeah, you know, to my knowledge, I think there's language about, you know, in general, like what you, I know I get this from the gas company, like my efficiency versus like other homes in my neighborhood and that sort of thing. And there may be, there's language speaking to that with the smart meters that we might be able to tell as far as the electrical consumption and how efficient the home is and that sort of thing, which I know is kind of going on now. But as far as actually shutting off the phone, no, we don't have the power to do that. We can't shut things off or monitor them. And, like, we don't even have that kind of technology at JCP&L.
And is this something as a utility that the municipality, the township, we have to approve?
No.
The people we have
approved it, so
okay.
it's coming in and doing it.
Right.
But obviously, I'm telling you tonight, with this schedule in 2024, so you're aware now. And if I wasn't coming here tonight, I'd have been getting in touch soon, but I'd email later. So
and
that's
it's good timing. I'd imagine that if there was a rate increase along with that.
Not so much related to the smart meters, but in general, JCP&L just filed a rate increase for the BPU, and you know, that's going to run its course, and we'll see what happens.
What kind of issues?
I'll get you the exact number. I got it the other day. I know out of all the electrical utilities, ours came in at the lowest. I don't want to quote it off the top of my head, but I will get
and there's a comment period that the public, if they wish,
correct.
Can go comment
yes,
on.
Yes, there is going to be a public comment period. That should all be on the BPU's website. I'll give you, Mayor. Mm-hmm. I'm going to make a note that with the rate increase to give you whatever information.
And we can put it all on the website and
yeah,
blast
yeah.
it out.
And I'll let you know, too, what it's going towards. It's a number of things that it's going towards. Just like every other industry, too, the electric company, we have different, even our equipment, there's inflation with that.
And lead time.
Yes, there's, I know, and no, I know, no one wants to hear about a rate increase in this economy, but it's like, it's with everything else, and I'll go through. I believe I have some information I can give you. Forget if I have internal and external information, but I should have something I can give you. So that's, you know, that's what's going on there. But I don't think the smart meters will come to that.
Now they've got to run the manual meter reader out
yeah.
just to run the meter.
We're paying the salary of the meter. They're trying to get rid of the person reading the meter with the smart meter, and so we're going to have to pay subsidize that.
Especially since that meter reader is probably going to have to visit one house here and then probably another house
that's
far
what I was
away.
Say. They're going to have to be driving around more and stuff to their various parts.
You are up
and
going
right
further and less efficient.
So.
Yeah.
Oh, I understand that concern.
And to that end. You did say not at this point.
But on the individual appliances, I know somebody who does that in their own home. You need something that's on the panel box itself to monitor each,
yes.
each
so,
circuit in your house to identify what's going on in your house.
So if for some reason down the line you do decide to do this, you would have to add something to this, or you'd
have to go in the house.
Okay.
What we're adding right now cannot do this.
Yeah.
Right, but I'm wondering if you decide down the road, how can you do it? Like,
you have probably.
I don't even think First Energy is looking at that right now, though, very honestly. We don't want to, you know, to my knowledge, we're not going into that business. We're literally looking how to the whole point of the smart meters is we just want to increase efficiency with outage restorations. That's what's really going on our end. And this technology is throughout the United States. It's called AMI technology, and we just want to get it out to New Jersey and our territory more as soon as possible. And you can look it up. You know, it's tried and true. It's out there already in Pennsylvania. And no, they're not monitoring anyone's like appliances or anything like that. And this is why too, I'm happy that it's rolled out other places before here. So we have a lot of those questions to answer. Just remember that we're not the government. We don't require the company, so we're not spying on anyone or anything like that.
Yeah, the big issue, I think, is the radiation. I mean,
yes.
An article that, you know, in Europe, they've eliminated these smart meters across all the countries almost.
Yeah, we're told very little radio frequency, less than cell phones, less than TVs and radios. Also,
but there's a whole system involved. So you take the 1 meter at my house, and I probably would agree with you. But then you take the whole system, all the routers, all that stuff. It's just another level of this stuff that the European Union has decided against. So, I don't know.
No, yeah, we're told it's safe. And and that there's research behind
it. Yeah, I told my mother I was safe when I went by my bike.
I'll give you some now. Studies.
Yeah.
They did give me studies and stuff.
Yeah. You need to share those with a lot of people so you have less opposition.
No, I'll send them over to
you.
And, that's with the AMI technology. I think that's really all I had to say about that. And yes, I know there's different questions, and we'll work together to field them too as we get closer to that time. You know, depending on your resolution or not, we'll go through it. Just finally, too, what I wanted to go through. I just wanted to go through the service restoration process, specifically when we have big storms, just for a few minutes, so we're all kind of on the same page of what happens when we have, especially more complicated outage or storm outage. So the power goes out. What I tell everyone is just, we don't have the smart meters right now. Make sure you're calling in your outage to JCP&L right away. When you call that customer, or text it. A lot of people had it online where they texted it or they write it in on it. That's fine. That's all fine. What happens when you contact our customer service and you call in your outage, it immediately goes to our distribution control system and creates an alert. Not even tell the township officials. Make sure the residents are calling in the outage, like say as opposed to me calling it in and calling it, that actually takes longer. And then they just do it and generate the order. I'm always the second call. And what I can do is I can follow up usually the events created by that. And I can kind of give you an idea. Oh, hey, you got assigned. Oh, no, it's not assigned. We're bogged down. That sort of thing. So that's you know, that's step one, is make sure it's called in. It's 88 lights with two S's. And that's what you can do for an outage or anything where you have sparking wiring, 911, you know, those are 911 calls. Call 911 too if there's fire or anything like that. So once we get, say, in a bigger storm, like in DC, it's a Sandy, or even like Christmas, where there's just a lot of wind and damage, the first thing we're going to do, because there's so many outages, is we're going to isolate and make safe and assess damage. So for the first day or so, in a bigger storm especially, you're going to just see us all running hazard and figuring out where there's this line and this line. It has to do with restoration, so that when the line crews go out and they start fixing, they don't get back there and electrocuted and that sort of thing. And when we're assessing too, we're usually saying, okay, we need a tree crew, we need this crew. We're figuring out what we need. So we'll do that a lot. A good example was when the tornadoes kind of went through C&J this weekend. Like, I know at one point in town, a whole bunch of poles came down. It came down at 9 o'clock at night. We're going to assess that for a while. It, you know, just because you have to kind of trace what's going on, tree crews and that sort of thing. So the first round of you seeing us is usually assessing. If we're coming and going right after a larger event or a very complicated outage. So then the next thing we'll do is, in a much bigger event than what we've had recently, is we're going to repair our high voltage transmission lines and all our essential functions first, like our local substation and that sort of thing. And just because they're all water damaging customers, so that all has to get fixed first in a larger situation. And then from there, we restore our critical facilities, our hospitals, our schools, our warning centers, if they're out, that sort of thing. And so they all get the next priority. Then we do our main feeders and our distribution lines. And then we do the largest number of customers, and then down to the individual homes, which I know can be frustrating if you're someone on the same outage. But that's typically the way we do it. In cases of these more complicated outages, what we'll have to do, just so I can touch on that, we'll see, okay, there's tree damage. We have separate tree crews from our line crews, so the tree crews will come out. They'll make it, safe to clean up all the tree damage. Then we have to get the line crews out. Sometimes they may be tied up on other outages, so they'll come back as soon as they can. But sometimes that's where a lag. I know some of those outages too. The line crews will come out, they'll start working. They'll get something else really complicated. They may have to time out and get another line crew in, that sort of thing. So that's where you're seeing some of those longer outages, just to give you an idea of what's going on. And we're not ignoring it or leaving it, but we're just getting the appropriate personnel out. But I will bring that in comments to you without any concern of how long you were out. I understand that. What we do is with the ETRs, when there's a bigger situation,
ETR stands for estimated time of
restoration. I'm sorry, yes. This is what we do with that. So say, like around Christmas, when we had the larger outages everywhere, those kind of storms, we disable all our ETRs and we set what's called the global. The global is when we expect to restore like the last individual homes, and then we work backwards from that. Try to set what are called user ETRs. Typically on an outage, that's like an isolated outage, we'll give a 2 to 3 hour ETR. And the reason being is 80-90% of our calls, we are able to fix them in 2 to 3 hours. We have cast back internally that whatever we can do, say in a situation like you have to disable that sooner to try to set a user, that's something I'd work at that internally to figure out the first person to bring this up. Because I know it can be frustrating that it keeps going out in 3 hours because it's still not restored. I actually want to bring that up more than this month. I'm glad you said that tonight. But that's some of them are automated, but they're supposed to get disabled when it's more complicated, so that doesn't even happen. And I will bring that up again. That's the ETRs. Also too, and I want to say this to the Township Committee just so you're aware, if we have a large enough storm, like an Ezeus or something of that nature, where the OEM activates in Hunterdon County, what we're doing now too, that I just like to remind people, is we're going to funnel everything through the local OEM. So the local OEM is going to go up to the county OEM on anything they want prioritized. And I can certainly give updates on orders and that sort of thing, but I'm just trying to get on the same page with towns that we're doing more of an incident command process. If there's a huge storm that basically activates the OEM, we started doing this during the CCS. But just if we had a humongous storm and you wanted to prioritize something, it's going to go the OEM route now. And certainly, again, I can check in on a status. And then on everyday outages, like we've been working, Mayor, that's fine to keep going the way we're going. I just want to bring up there was like a big catastrophic event that activated OEM. And we've talked about it too at OEM meetings and whatnot. We do an annual meeting and that's, we go through that in Hunterdon County and open wells everywhere. So that's the end of my presentation. That was everything I wanted to share with Clinton Township. I'm open to any other questions, concerns.
We've got some as we went along, so I just ask anybody have any other
public?
Yeah. Oh, no, I know we can, though.
You know what I meant?
Yes.
I'm not using that term.
No, it's fine. I totally know what you guess.
It, yeah, I use ETA all the time for...
I mean, I say ETA, but personally, it's fine, but when I'm not here, but yes, no, I know what that means.
And would you be willing to come back to talk about smart meters or send a representative that's well-versed in it?
Yeah.
Like, if we got the public was interested enough
sure.
in something that's kind of being forced down that road, if we can't vote on it.
And now that's going to be toward the end of next year.
Yes, toward the end of next year.
Yeah.
And my unit, we were actually just talking about this yesterday in external affairs about... You know, what could be put together for more of a public presentation? Like, you're right. Asking this at the right time. We were just talking about this, and we have an inquiry in about, you know, the corporate. So, I would be more than happy to come and or bring someone to
right.
my meeting.
I'd very much like you to come back, as we kind of discussed,
yeah.
toward the end of the summer or early fall, after all that other work is completed,
yes.
and you can provide a full readout. We probably don't need the, unless we have individual questions, we probably don't need all of the restoration process.
No,
that, but
I just
we can talk about the specifics of what was done.
Yes.
What's...
And like I said, I gave you the area tonight, so you kind of know that that's the area we're working on. We're working on. But when I come back, I'm just going to kind of try to tie it all up with what we did. A lot of it's wiring and equipment and that sort of thing. We did the forestry in the area.
And you did Haytown, I think, last year. That was helpful for forestry.
Right as I was coming
yep.
on, we did
yep.
some forestry work.
Yeah, and not for nothing. If they can't read your meter, like if I don't mow my weeds and they send me the nasty game, I couldn't read it, they estimate it. So instead of charging us $15 a month, maybe read it every 3 months, okay? You know? Yeah, or I love your idea,
you
read it. And then you can do an audit, right? You know, every 6 months, maybe do an audit that, you know, is Mr. So-and-so accurate.
Like that, we do have to get BPU approval. So, the Board of Public
Utilities
in New Jersey, they regulate us. We're a regulated utility. We're a private company. The Board of Public Utilities regulates us.
They're appointed by the...
They're appointed by the governor.
Yeah,
which,
probably. Yes,
and
no, they are.
The board that's appointed by the
they
governor.
Are.
So, by extension, then you are going to...
Yeah, I would.
Yeah, I mean, they're answerable.
But they're not elected, though.
No.
Yeah.
But
it's all public.
But I was going to say, their meetings are all public.
Yeah. Oh, subject to Oprah,
yes.
I would imagine.
Yes, they're subject to Oprah, absolutely. I'm just coming out of what I know from it. We don't work for that. We have tariffs and regulations and standards, even with our electrical service that we need to be in. That's all regulated by the EPA. There's standards that we have to uphold, even as far as voltage and those kind of issues. And, you know, that's why, too, we're always looking at our circuits like this, like what we're doing in the Clinton area now, too.
BPU regulates gas as well.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
To the extent that
anyone apparently can regulate cable, but that's a different conversation. Oh, and more people moving in, then that's causing issues with the grid.
How is that working? That's what we've been talking about, or like the need to come out of the
concern? We have to serve them, so whether it's, you know, like we may have to take the power more quickly, like when people move into new developments, right, they have to run the power and work that out with the developer. but we have to serve it, so we're going to serve it in one way or another. Yeah, I mean, right now, I know what people do, but people can get residential upgrades and service, they do upgrade and service, so if you need to go on more power, you can accommodate that. But no, but you're bringing up, it is a conversation that's being had, you know, with all the electrification and the push towards that in different places. But you know, so far so good as we stand with what we're being asked.
And on the flip side, a lot of equipment, appliances, lighting, get to be a little bit more efficient, use less energy.
Sure. But that's what I guess. The LED lighting, that really slows down on it. So if you have energy efficiency, you need to bring those lights too. Which is good.
Okay. Very good. Thank you very much again. Appreciate your coming out and taking the time.
No, absolutely.
And
all
your help addressing some of these issues. And I'm glad that you found some, to be honest, because we were getting sufficient complaints that there had to be something there.
Yes. No, that's, they yes. And specifically on that circuit.
Makes sense.
And they're, you know, when I come back to, that's what I kind of want to look at, where we were at with outages on that circuit, what we're seeing. So hopefully, you know, there'll be an improvement over time.
Yes. Yeah. I'm going to switch on the way by. We're all browsing here. All right, thank you very much.
No, thank you. Thank you all for having me. Thank you. I would always be the person here because I'm a municipal representative, so I always have to come even if someone attends with me, basically.
Yeah.
So that's, I would always be here.
Very good.
No, thank you.
Thank you
all for, and I will take all this back, and we'll especially with some of the different smart meter, and I'm going to let my team do that. Clinton Township has requested a more formal smart meter presentation, but you know, available on the book and all that. So I will take that.
Excellent.
Thank you for
having me. We'll go now to reports, Councilman Glazer.
Yeah, Planning Board, we had a regular meeting on Monday night. One end of business was the, how I describe this, I'll call it a rehearing for Annadale Village. This is the area of redevelopment of Oxio Gold Uni Building. We heard a couple of different times, substantially the same, not much has changed, but because of the new lot lines, they had to get their various granted. The subdivision had to be redrawn just a little bit because of the lot line. And then because the lot lines changed, there were a couple of new variances, like technical things, but what used to be on the side of the unit is now the front, so there had to be a variance for trashing. So
the plans themselves didn't change.
No, exactly. The layout is all the same. I mean, it just, but nonetheless, it went through the process. It did receive amended preliminary and final site approval and amended subdivision approval on Monday night with our very patient developer. So we got building, made full permits, stuff like that.
Well, they've got to resubmit everything.
I did ask.
They have to resubmit everything for the state.
Can you reassure me that the new plan shows only a portion of Washington?
It does.
Shows only a portion of Washington. It's funny, I looked back at the survey that you had sent, that it's all various. The lines were redrawn, Trishka.
Yeah, we got to do all the plans with the county. We've got to do all of them.
Yeah.
But so we've got to make sure that they're
pushing
it and
file.
And my A number one assistant on that in that regard is part of this. Here.
So
we'll muddle through.
Yeah, we'll see if it's our secret weapon.
And by the way, at some point we'll also be bringing you an amendment to the development agreement.
Okay, I was going to ask you that question. So talk about pulling permits in 30 days and stuff like that. That's actually not consistent with the approval they get from the planning board. I mean, that they could do 30 days.
We're
going to
have to
visit
there.
But it was good to get that through the system again. Sewage authorities meeting tomorrow night, as a matter of fact. The agenda looks like all normal business. I don't think there's much to talk about. The finance committee gave nothing new, except we have a hearing in 3 weeks for the budget that was introduced. And then, the subcommittee, I do want to talk about that working session. We think the agenda can tolerate it, but the agenda is very busy. We have a lot of
the next couple of meetings are going to be very, very busy.
So if we can start to hone in on a day later, maybe.
May or June.
I just want to notify that one person's been in touch and maybe someone else, but we'll see. I don't know if that'll pan out.
Yep. Well, I'll pack more on what I've got.
Yeah, once you look at the long range agenda, it's hard. No, there's a lot of stuff moving right now.
Thank you. Some of it may not take as much time.
Thank you.
Yeah, maybe not drug travel.
That's right.
Councilman Touch and Ask?
Nothing to report on committees. I guess I'll be moving my timeline to move off the grid up.
Oh.
So for those of you that haven't realized, my wife, this is an issue of hers.
Oh, is it?
I didn't realize it. My wife's very educated, that. Very smart, and it's the radio frequency thing.
Hmm.
She sent me tons of articles that are out there, so she will be at the meeting when they come.
She'll probably
keep them alive.
Paying $15 a month over it.
Yeah, she will. But I like your idea. You know, trust us. Let us read it.
Do it quarterly.
I'll take a picture.
We'll pay a quarterly.
Yeah.
Oh.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. We have that option now.
Oh yeah, we do. You're right.
But then they come back and you verify.
Yeah.
Like yeah, a couple of months or two later. Whatever. Yeah. Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah.
It's not unreasonable.
I mean, I think at this early stage, it's a great article for the newspaper. That Clinton Township. There's plenty of material out there on the websites, on the internet, about this. In California, which you would think is like all over this, they're banning it left and right now because they're running into issues.
Really?
Oh, yeah. 50 municipalities banned it across the board. They must have a different setup than we
do. Yeah, we couldn't do it.
Yeah, we couldn't do it, but we can make a stink. You know, to whatever end. That's it.
Mm-hmm. Councilwoman Sanders.
That's funny. Environmental Commission. Mary and I were meeting with Bill about EV charging stations. It's been an idea of his for a while, and he figured out a way to get them over near Bunk Park or at Bunk Park at no cost to us through using incentive programs. But I think what we need in narrow down is then what? Are we charging, are we giving the electricity? Are they paying for themselves?
We need a company to run it, I think.
Right.
Right?
I just want to make sure that's because
we're not doing come in and run it. I mean,
we're not in business to do that.
Yeah, I would have
so,
a problem with us.
Well, Tesla's actually asking the population of people where they want them. That's how they're deciding where they want them.
Well, I like the idea of having the incentive program and us not paying for it, but I think it would be proper for the people to pay when they get there that they pay for it.
Yeah, of course.
We just need to, you know, work that out. So that's April 11th with Bill. The salt study, the levels were low because we didn't have snow. So we picked a bad year to do the salt study, and we'll get back to that next year. and we were actually talking a little bit about maybe getting the weather station up at Windy Acres. And we have access to the educational grant money to do something like that. But we just have to see how to do it without electricity. But Mary has some pretty good ideas. It'll be sort of costly, but I think it is from the educational grant, I think, an idea. Green Team at Tuesday. Pia, who is from Highbridge Environmental Commission, and the Green Team attended, and they're trying to get together with us on some other joint projects that we did last year. Our stream cleanup, which is April 15th, the registration is pretty much full. Marion and I got two spots in Highbridge, so it really went quickly. Round Valley, which is where we wanted to go, was filled up right away. And the proactivity cleanup that Green Team's doing on the 22nd is really pretty much ready to go. Yeah, I'm happy. We are asking for vendors for the Green Fair on July 8th, so I put some stuff out on Facebook, let's see, the Windy Acres hike, we already talked about that, I think, at the first invitational walk. Next one's May 13th, that's the birding. The walkability study in Annandale on April 21st, I'm not able to go because I'm doing the forestry thing. Heather, Brian, it looked like you were going to go?
Yeah, I am.
Okay, good.
And there is, just for the public, that's limited participation events.
Right, so the sign.
Not, right, yeah. Right. There's only so much space available, so it's not not for the general public to be trying to participate.
Okay. All right. Open Space Committee met March 23rd. My big news is the new foreman that we hired. Holy crap. We made the best decision. I took off on Friday. I took him and Jay and another Open Space member, Woody Acres. We walked the entire wooded lot, and then we went to Prospect East. And it was as if we were walking with a professional tree service. I couldn't, like, he saw things that I had to cut things, and I just was like, oh my god. The money we are potentially going to save by hiring this guy, just the ash tree expense alone. So I can't tell you. Oh, big time. So we did that last Friday. Les and Ben met them, Jay, this morning. We talked about the golf, the disc golf, and the 5K. Hackett's is self-explanatory, Primary Trails, and Brace is self-explanatory.
And Spring Cycle.
Springside, I know, yeah, I can arrange for that at some point. Okay, I had talked about doing a walk for Beaverbrook and a disc golf clinic, so I got dates confirmed. Matt LaCourte and Ben Hunt will do May 20th, it's a Saturday in the morning, they're going to do that. So that's confirmed, and June 17th is when Mike's going to do a tour of the Beaverbrook. So it'll be like a hike. We did it before, it was crazy. Okay, and the date for the school class trip is June 8th now, rainy day June 9th. So, I think it's 6. It's not the whole grade, too. I think it's like a class. Yeah, so they hired Deborah, who did the nature walk at Whitney Acres. Mm-hmm. So they basically want a repeat of what they saw. So I'll be there with her, and then they're going to do like a launch and activities and. Yeah.
So. Use the pavilion.
Pavilion.
That'd be great.
Good.
Yeah.
You can put the pavilion up there.
The
thing.
Except for that little COVID thing, it's exactly what you said.
Exactly.
That's great.
Exactly. So that's just with that. Oh, the bulk tree planting. That's definitely going ahead nicely. Heather's been in touch with Jay as far as logistics go. She picked out 3 locations at Whitney Acres that we thought would be a good area to plant trees. Again, with Jay and the photo went, they saw the one that was the most successful. So they're going to be coordinating like how to get the stuff in there. So, but that'll be good. I got some information for that. The only thing I wanted to ask you, Brian, is about these coupons for Volunteer Day.
Yep.
I was hoping we could feel the coupon where they can get on the street couples on the committees and for investment and for.
I like I said, dude, I think we should definitely do it, and I think we should have
cupcake
stuff.
You can have one hot dog. Like, I don't know how to...
One...
Thank you for your service.
One, I would say meal, but one...
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Or maybe an ice cream.
I don't think we do.
Well, who's... I don't know.
Oh, you're saying we do.
Yeah, there's a recreation one.
I guess.
Much more in our control.
Yeah.
Well, I'm going to mock up the coupon, so if you're somebody can just tell me like, what to put on it. Good idea. Alright. That's it, also.
Okay. Council President Kraus.
Thank you, Mayor. I do not have anything to report for Clinton Township Board of Education. As far as the Historic Preservation Commission, their next meeting is in May. There's been no April meeting, and I think these lack of meetings is you haven't been able to fill that Class A seat yet, or did you
have a
name?
I have a name. We can talk about it after.
Okay. For public safety, I did speak with Chief DeRosa, and I did see the emails going around about the speeding complaints in different locations in the township. The speed trail has been deployed. There's data that they received, and some pending as well. And I know the reports were shared. Spoke with Chief Emery. His report was included in our agenda packet for this evening. And I did speak with him regarding the ISO meeting that was held in Clinton. And basically, with the information that was provided, the ISO was going to reinvestigate.
Oh, okay.
And then, according to, I forget his name, Shoemaker, I think, there's no reason that we should be able to go back to the
Sounds like they found the hole in the,
yeah,
the original analysis. So I'm good. I'm glad we flagged it.
Yeah. And also, we still have a meeting pending with Clinton.
Yes, and I mentioned that on,
Saturday, the Jeeps, both the Jeeps.
Okay.
So, I just have to, we'll talk about Pines.
Sure.
EMS, there was correspondence about funding for this year and a follow-up meeting with them as well, so it looks like our meetings are starting to pile again.
I don't know that we do need a meeting.
I think he said, and I think he was reading.
We could.
Yeah.
It can't hurt. They were worried about ambulance replacement schedule. I think if we do it the way we used to do it.
Yeah, which is fine, but I think that, in just general, I think
they'd not get at it.
Yeah.
He wasn't there Saturday. So.
Right. And no report from CERT. I did email the administrator on a few
that
were pending, as well as some stuff that was pending with Public Works. Jay got back to me. He's going to follow up and let me know.
The administrator's got a reduced workload in the next few weeks. So,
okay.
Other commitments in the next couple of weeks, so we can hear a couple of things.
No problem.
A lot of training for sure.
Amy checked, touched on the event.
That's it's actually Friday, right? We're all set to go with that at the firehouse.
Yes.
For a third.
Yep.
And
thank you very much for that.
Yeah, no problem. And did you speak with Mr. Newman?
I did.
Okay.
So I did. I actually talked to the clerk about the bill.
Okay.
And Amy, I get a check.
I gotta check all the rain barrel stuff is in that trail at that
still there.
Actually right now. I just have to make sure. I just texted the deputy chief, so I'm waiting to hear back from him.
Excellent.
Oh.
No, but the UT
Yeah, it's not good. All
right.
I
thought I
won.
Yep.
So from the rec committee's perspective, I don't think we've had a meeting since. There's been a bunch of rec meetings, but I don't believe in between the last council meeting and this meeting. The additional equipment at the Bond Playground has been installed.
Yeah.
I am trying to get Field of Dreams reopened in the near future as soon as possible. And maybe on hold till the budget passes because they need funds in order to accomplish the tree work there. And rightly so.
Yeah.
They don't want to close, open the park where they have ash trees that are significant
events.
They're not special. So hopefully that occurs soon. I think the time for Field of Dreams is somewhat limited, so the rec committee doesn't continue to work on planning the next playground routine. As with everything, you might imagine costs have risen for it. So. We'll have to see where that leads us.
Try for one of those grants.
We did, and we'll keep trying for different grants.
Oh, yeah, we'll keep hoping for this time we'll be purpose in the chain next year's budget.
Exactly. Like the apple. Yep. I'm trying to think what else. From the direct perspective, April 29th, Community Day, the Larrabee Square.
Yep, right.
Oh, yeah, the Easter egg, I forgot about it, because it's usually this past weekend, and for whatever reason, it's this coming Saturday, the day before Easter, I won't be able to be there. I'll be away for Easter.
Anybody?
It starts at 10. Volunteers can show up at 8:30. Right in the front parking lot there, and then
that's what we're
asking. Well, in the fields, if it doesn't rain, they'll do it in the grass. A little bit better orchestrated. We're not going to let Dr. just release everyone to pick up the eggs. Yeah, bring it fast. And personnel-wise, we sorted out one confused team where I got one name mixed up with another and gave somebody heart attack. So that's squared away. But we've got a position currently that we're looking at trying to fill in between the construction and the zoning. So search continues for that position. And there will also be at least one, if not two, positions posted for Public Works. So, moving along.
the full-time positions?
One or two.
So that's that. I think that's all I've got. I think you mentioned the case.
Okay.
All right. I understand from having almost literally run into the chief on the way over that the police position that's posted, if anyone wishes to submit, it closes up, right? So probably not in time for the newspaper. With that, we'll move to resolutions, the first being a resolution awarding a goods and services agreement to Animal Control Services, LLC, for animal control services during the calendar year 2023. Anyone have any... What's
the matter? They're the incumbent. Maybe it's done for years, right?
They are, and I think the intent is probably to go out to bid at the end of the year.
Okay.
Bill was trying to get it in this year, but it was, with everything else going on, not able to be accomplished. Just to be more formal and...
Yeah.
Follow the process a little, right, with finance. But.
No, that is a typo in the title of the resolution. It's supposed to be Animal Control Solutions.
Duly noted. I wouldn't have noticed that. Excellent. Any
motion?
No.
No. You have a motion over here? May I have a second over here? Roll call.
Yes.
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 Yes. Next, we have a resolution concerning the transfer of ownership interests in Clinton. Yeah, Trishka, I feel like I should recuse from this one. So let me do that. Council President, you're in charge.
Sure.
No listening. All right. Resolution concerning the transfer of the ownership interest in Clinton LIHTC, Urban Renewal LLC, to Conifer Realty LLC for the development of affordable housing on Block 82, Lot 4.04, the Meruthian Development. Yes.
So basically, as I understand it, Pearl basically had a 25% ownership interest in a whole bunch of different individual urban renewal companies, including Clinton LIHTC Urban Renewal, which is the entity that is for urban renewal companies. And it was potentially transferring its ownership interest in basically the whole portfolio over to Conifer. So the resolution is worded a little strangely because when Kate Coffey represents Pearl and she and I were going to talk about the housing agreement, we have to consent to the transfer of title. But the title, the ownership of the company, of the property itself is not changing. It's the same urban renewal entity that owns it now that we continue to own it. It's that 49% ownership interest in that company from the parent companies transferring over to a different entity. So basically, we're not convinced that the council needs to actually formally consent to this. However, she and I both agreed, and certainly to Conifer's peace of mind and Pearl's peace of mind, to at a minimum at least have this documented that it's happening, the council's aware of it, that we've looked at the agreement, that to the extent that consent is needed, we're consenting to it. But and Conifer has represented in writing, and it's going to be it's in the resolution itself, which is signed, that they will be assuming all of the obligations and the affordable housing
agreement.
So,
it is.
But given what we're dealing with, is they've got a lot of claimants, and on the line that they can jeopardize by having produced some question as to this transfer of the ownership.
What's the 51% of it? Is the prevention affordable?
I'm going to assume it's probably one of the finance aspects.
So, Pearl then is sort of the managing partner with the minority interest.
I believe that's the case.
Because I think in one of the things that they are both referred to as managing member.
I believe that's the case. And,
okay.
I think the rest of the ownership interest is going to be.
Yeah.
Right, as you said, our party, we have this is a redevelopment company, the developer itself, which is not.
And this isn't having any effect on the development, but part of their reputable.
Oh, yeah.
Is
the building, so. Yeah, my understanding is they're acquiring those portfolio.
That's my understanding.
Yeah, it's just a corporate, it's a corporate transaction, really.
Yeah.
Yeah.
This is a nonsense standard, I don't think. They have a high for moral peace of mind that nothing's being done, that they're not holding a switch on the township.
Is that the one that's affected, Tricia?
I'm not sure in the.
But they've been vague on that.
I'm sure that it's a done deal, that's the thing.
Oh, okay.
I think.
Okay.
It's.
If they do it, we approve it.
Right, we've got Pearl now, and if it goes counter, we've got counter.
That's exactly.
Okay. How about me?
Any other discussion on that question? I'll entertain a motion.
I'll just make a motion.
And a second. Roll call, please.
Yes.
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 We're listening.
I thought.
That was gonna be the test, right?
Yeah.
You'll get it, right?
And we were gonna do a lot of stuff to get out of the room. You could have our big chairs. Hold on.
April Fools. All right, the next two are introduction of ordinances, both of which are essentially required by statute.
That's essentially.
Well, I guess the form's a little bit flexible, to some degree.
Particularly.
Set our own fees. Set our own fees.
Yeah.
Basically.
And on the one that you have, that also is actually where we get to it.
Okay. So the first is an ordinance of the Township of Clinton in Hunterdon County, New Jersey, amending the code of the Township of Clinton, New Jersey, to establish requirements for lead-based paint inspections. This is a requirement that all municipalities require lead-based paint inspections for certain residences and buildings, I think mostly residences, that were constructed prior to 1978. That's how it looked like.
Yeah, and it's, you know, there's already a lot of requirements in terms of abating that the hazards, but what this imposes now is an obligation on the part of municipalities to actually inspect these structures.
With a certified inspector.
With a certified inspector. The owners of the structures, the burden is on them to notify the municipality that an inspection is needed, but the obligation is on the municipality. The tenant in the shared service agreement, you know, the town's employees, it has to be, you have to have your own certified lead-based paint inspector, either on staff or being.
Well, they can hire an outsider.
It depends, actually. There's language in the statute that's if that's for municipalities that don't maintain their own permanent. We have our own.
Okay.
Inspectors and code enforcement officials.
So because we have a code enforcement official, somebody on staff has to either be certified.
Or the shared service agreement.
We can't contract it out to an independent.
Not through, now, you can get the homeowner, the property owner, to do it, so.
But we can't require them to do it.
Not require them.
Really?
So, now, we can have the, not only can you, we should charge whatever needs to be charged for this to cover your costs. It's very clear in the decision and in the ordinance. That money then has to go into, whatever you're charging for this goes into a dedicated fund because it is supposed to cover the costs for specifically, not just the inspections themselves, but administering all of this.
So can we outsource it and use those fees to cover the cost of having outsourced it, not via a shared service, but via a private party?
I've got to look more closely at that. The way I'm reading that language, I'm not sure we should
count. How hard is the code to get one of our
answers? The state is providing the training. I believe there's also grant money that they're supposed to be making available. I think the construction official has been in regular contact with the BCA. The BCA is supposed to be promulgating regulations, but they haven't been finalized yet. But they haven't been very close. So I think there are still a lot of details that need to be
can it apply just to rental, right? So not on the sale of a building, the sale of an old building with lead we don't care about. Does it apply to both?
I believe it's for rentals.
I read it as applying to rentals, which surprised me. I'm like, for sale of a building,
look, it's a state statute. We're applying state law here, so I'm not saying we should be.
Yes, you're correct.
Yeah.
I was just.
Yes.
There must have been a maybe there's another law about that. I don't know. Maybe it's a real estate disclosure.
It may be. That's what I'm wondering.
Yeah, I assume.
They already recovered.
There might be a disclosure.
This is very specific to rentals. Because there are all sorts of other requirements that need to be on the landing has to provide extensive information to the tenants.
And once obtained, that certificate is good when you're done.
For
a couple years, two, 3 years.
Either 2 years or 3 years.
Yeah.
And then they have to get missing.
It's kind of quite a process the state is implementing.
Is this the one you wish to really over
that? No. And interestingly, this is even though, it obviously is, there's been the construction office, but it's actually to help with this.
Yeah.
And this is where.
So we really have control on this ordinance over the fees and the penalties and not much else.
And the fees we can readdress later if anything wrong.
Well, I was going to ask another question. So let's just game it out a little bit and suggest that over the course of the next few weeks we have a public hearing on this ordinance. Somebody suggests a different fee. Makes a valid case. Would that be substantive? Would we have to be introduced?
So it's substantive, or does the statute speak to the exact language of the statute and then you have to introduce the amendments as if you are making a substantial change to the substance? So that's not very good. So, in other words, a minor substantive, just as it's substantive, doesn't necessarily meet the requirement. It's a substantial change to the substance. But and that's not clearly defined in the law. The way I tend to approach this is I try to put myself in a position of the city having the public. And at the public hearing, you guys discuss a change. And my guess is, can I understand that change readily sitting there and decide on the spot in my forward hands? Or is it the sort of thing where you guys are following the house and following, you're not sure what the intent is and what are they talking about? Is that okay? Isn't it? That's kind of my focus.
Okay.
So I think changing a fee, someone sitting there could figure out probably pretty quickly, but if you wanted
And I would suggest we've got a fee in here for 125, 75, 175. You change it to 150, 100, and that's okay. But if you change it to 1,000, then I would say that's
probably. I think that might get people a little
bit. Well, also, the fees can't be representative, I don't think, anyway.
No,
so this is. I couldn't go to 1,000 unless we said our contractor costs 1,000.
It's interesting, too. It's very clear in here. This is not, this can't go into general funds.
Right, it's like a little.
It goes into construction funds, essentially.
Well,
separate.
Yeah, it's a sub account. It's like a lead account. Yeah. That's for Christine to figure out. Yeah.
Yeah.
Which will allow us to track it over time and understand that our fee is adequate. I guess if the fund tell the deficit, it would tell us. Well,
tell you so.
Also requires good record keeping on the part of the construction office.
Because it is a new burden on the township, for sure.
And the residents.
Yeah, oh, for all the landlords, yeah.
Yes, they have very stringent record keeping requirements. There are more record keeping requirements on their part. But yes, there are absolutely more.
I mean, the bulk of our multifamily condo associations are all after the consent meeting, which is good news, so it won't apply to most of them.
Correct.
And that's actually the bulk of the housing stock in the town.
Not much.
Well.
There are also, you know, there's another exception here is, I guess that there are certain kinds of, dwellings or developments that will serve on the state. So they already have certification in the state, they have to be sort of here. There are a couple of other, exceptions here, so.
Any other questions, concerns? Introduction, so mold over. In that case, may I have a motion?
Second.
Roll.
Yes.
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 Yes. Next, we have an ordinance of the.
So what do we have here?
How top of the green day?
How soon do we need it?
I mean, I don't believe that they need to start registering. Have to go back and look, they think it's something that's.
Just the one that Mr. Carlos on.
But the DCA has been having now. The fact that it's been introduced, so I don't think from the DCA's perspective, it's been mandated that it's April 26th, and this is personally anything that can.
There's a lot on the defense. So without objection, we'll set it for May 10th.
Resounding. Now we have an ordinance of the Township of Clinton and Hunterdon County, New Jersey, amending the code of the Township of Clinton, New Jersey, and to establish business insurance registration requirements. This is in the same vein, registering for rental units and individual businesses that are something we might be taking up later, home-based businesses.
Just trying to talk about it.
Residential, yeah.
So, ties in, but another state requirement.
It's another state requirement, and yes, and it's definitely an inspection, but it's going to be purely
liability.
If you own a business, or if you own certain kinds of rental units, you have to carry a certain amount of liability and rental insurance. I'm assuming that they've looked at, normally home companies, and, would work, is that it's, but the key is that you have to register with the township. And provide the township with a certificate of insurance that shows that you are in compliance with the statute, and the township can issue a certificate of registration. So, the record keeping requirements, if you can establish a reasonable fee to cover your costs, the form of application, obviously, is going to be specified in the ordinance, it's going to be developed. People have to register their dogs, and they were just administratively at some point just like in the family. Yet another requirement. And yes, I think it's a good question as to this is really about people home-based applications.
I'm assuming you'll have to sort that out in Trenton. I think it could be harder. If you're a baker home-based business, they run into trouble saying it's established those, and now they turn around and say, oh, the truck down. Excellent, it's a loss of insurance.
But again, to Christian's point, you probably have some of that already. The real thing is it's just a hurdle. It's another hassle.
Oh, yeah, it's another
hassle. And having, even if you have already had insurance, it's like
the tourist bar.
It was weird, I looked to see where this came from. It was very kind of information.
Well, the Senate President's lawyer.
Or.
I'm not going to speak to it. What I can tell you is that basically the language in the ordinance
comes from the Senate.
Very close in fact, it seems. With very few exceptions.
Yes. Any
And the questions of interpretation is going to be how the board's interpreting the statute.
And this, you know, this is captures the landlord's suggestion.
Yep. And the shame of it is that there's an expense on our side that needs to be covered.
Right.
And while the fee's not unreasonable, it's just, it's another.
Now, the fee that is in here is, could be changed. It's, this is, I hope they wrote the town council as far as any, try looking. I mean, I didn't, honestly, I didn't find a ton of municipalities that it wasn't covered. I mean, looking at, I don't know, just a surprise, but, you know, the $50 isn't a great fee, you raise it, but.
The dogs? What's the dog from here?
It's called, and then they. So, and, you know, you can, this would not be a change it, so, you know, it's not.
You can change it later.
You can absolutely change it later. It's just, you know, you can do this as a placeholder. I know that the administrator is doing a comprehensive review of all of the fees. So this could get changed as part of that review. It's, I had to pick the numbers for what you really do.
$50 more than the dog, I mean, so, yeah.
No one is going to claim that their numbers are unreasonable.
Right.
Anything.
Then if we by claim it's unreasonable, council will say it's not recovering our costs.
I'm not concerned that it is excessive.
I wouldn't raise it.
So the only thing I wanted to bring to the question of the claim is, it's, you can do a little cleanup because it's obviously one portion of the
I didn't see it.
But the substantive change is under the violations and penalties. The way the ordinance is currently drafted is our standard penalty referred to the general penalties.
Right.
What I would like to recommend to the council is that we change this to what is actually in the statute. The statute specifically authorizes the municipalities to charge a penalty of not less than 500 and not more than 5,000 against owners and developers. I would, my advice would be to modify the ordinance to include the same penalty that is in this, that is authorized by statute.
I would agree only because you need the range.
Yeah.
Just to be in compliance with the statute, you can't charge.
Especially the minimum 500, which were under the normal penalties provisions, the highest of the minimums of 100, which the statute specifically allows it.
Not only allows it, requires it.
No, not allows the municipality to establish discretionary measures.
What the minimum is?
No, but whether to go with, is that going to be in the legislation? The governing body of the municipality may provide ordinance and establish an administrative fee. The governing body of the municipality may collect the same facility fund not less than 500 or no more than 5,000. So I think we do have the option of the statute to go with the standard penalties.
Well, let's go with it.
But I would go with what's in the statute because it's giving you.
Do we really need to hit somebody with a $500?
So who sets the penalty then? Is this to go to the judge? It goes to the judge.
And even here, it would go to the judge. And the only thing that's different here is the minimum. So if you're comfortable with defaulting to your normal penalties, that's fine. I just wanted to fight it for you guys. I didn't want to just have it be the way it's drafted, and then you look later on and say, wait, you just have to be the way it's drafted.
My feeling on it is that this isn't something we would have done absent the requirement from the state. So to be seeking large penalties for something we would not otherwise be doing.
And if we had the background a little more what the state was doing, you know, as a matter of public policy, saying they found a lot of landlords were.
Could not find anything.
Yeah.
I mean, this is on the legislation website.
Yeah, of course, the statute could not.
Sometimes if you go in the legislature and you track the bills, there will be statements that explain, you know, what it's for, why they're doing it, the issues are finally addressed, and not, and just, you know, all the statements are going to take what the statute says. For the requirements.
I kind of agree with that. I don't. We have a code, we have a regime. I mean,
you can always amend it.
And there,
well,
I'm assuming that the
judge's discretion to go higher if he thinks it's a bad case.
The initial fee is 100.
Right.
Right, the minimum.
Right, can always, if there's a second offense, we can always go higher for our ordinance.
Well, the way it's structured is everything in the registered in the community business, and not having registered in the community is supposed to.
Right.
Is considered a second violation, and that's.
Oh, so it's kind of.
That's totally standard.
But it's kind of like a construction violation or a fire, fire violation where they just start rolling. They really just start rolling.
Each year's given it, right? So if they did it for 5 years, they owe $500.
Yeah, well, it's each day.
Each year, the owner fails to register, fails to maintain that commercial, the game is separate.
Oh, so it's each year.
It's an annual requirement. I mean, but if it's something egregious, the judge has, you know, they're going to hire them. We're just saying the minimum's 100. We're not telling you it's not, you know, people hire them, but. $500 would seem like a lot.
It was something that we felt strongly about. I don't see anything.
I'm glad I brought it up.
Thank you.
I will just clean up.
Your gut was correct. In that case, we have a motion.
I'll move.
Wait a second.
Second.
Roll call.
Yeah.
Yes.
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 Public hearing, we'll do the 10th again.
Without objection.
And then last but not least, anybody want to pay the bills?
They're lower than the last few bills, so I'll make the motion.
I'll second. Move right along.
Roll the paper.
Yes.
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 Probably one of the longest meetings we've had in a while.
I'll make a motion to adjourn.
Thank you very much. May I have a second?
Second.
And may we have the very painful roll call that I hate.
Yes.
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 Sure. Thank you very much, everybody.
Well, thanks for answering my text.
You got to say 12 minutes.